Despite the opaque air, filled with wind-blown dust and grit, it was possible to see that a bright sun burned down on the enclave. It illuminated the dust in rays of light and enabled Ryan to get a better view of the rock face that lay above the redoubt entrance. While he'd been scanning the area, Mildred and Jack had moved out to seek cover. He lost sight of them in the shadows and frowned. It wasn't good practice not to know where his friends were stationed. The storm was so noisy that he couldn't call to them if necessary. Christy and Doc moved out, then Dean, and finally JB bringing up the rear. They should all be under cover in a rough V-shape, radiating from the entrance to the redoubt. From there, they'd move together at the head of the enclave and group together. Ryan scanned the rocks above the redoubt. It all seemed calm and empty, but his eye pierced the opacity of the storm with a burning suspicion. If this was regular weather for this stretch of land, then it wouldn't surprise him if the local baron and his sec-men were out patrolling their land. His sharp vision saw the glint of a blaster barrel as it caught a glimpse of sunlight that filtered through the dust. A fraction of a second later came the sharp crack of Mildred's ZKR. Obviously, Mildred had the same suspicions. Chips of rock joined the grit and dust in the swirling air, and the barrel disappeared. The staccato rattle of an H&K MP5K cut through the howl of the storm, the short burst kicking up chunks of dry earth and pebbles from around the sparse cover Mildred had been able to find.
Heads up!
The spray of bullets fanned in such a way that Ryan was instantly aware that they had come from the opposite direction to that in which Mildred had fired her blaster. So they were covered from above by a group of sec men in a formation similar to their own. Tactically, it was almost a stalemate. The problem was, they were underneath the other group, closed in.
Dad! They're moving down!
Ryan was aware of his son as a blur across the floor of the enclave, tracked by sprays of H&K and Uzi fire that crisscrossed. It was only because of his speed in changing direction that Dean was able to attain cover about 20 yards from where his father was positioned.
What the hell are you doing? Never break cover!
There wasn't any, and they were moving behind me, and they're sec men from the redoubt!
What?
Ryan whirled, his hand snaking to the panga on his thigh and clutching the handle as he became aware of a shuffling sound behind him. The panga was raised to strike when a flash of white hair and red eyes made Ryan drop the weapon to his side.
Closing in.
Jack hunkered down beside Ryan. The Colt Python was in his fist, looking huge and heavy in that small hand.
Moving in like pincer. Air land, too.
How many?
Cat 7, maybe 8. No more.
Even numbers, then, more or less. Okay, we've got to get through that channel over there before they can close us down.
Move quick, shoot fast. Sec-man's slack enough for us to see, so maybe chance.
Yeah.
Ryan looked back over the hummock. He could see that JB and Christy had moved up to join Dean and Mildred so that they were only 20 yards away. There was no sign of Doc.
Where's Doc?
Lost in storm? Let me look.
Jack disappeared from Ryan's side and into the swirl of dust and grit. And into someone else's trouble. Murphy's men had the advantage of old-tech radios that kept them in touch. The compact devices spluttered and buzzed in the rad-riddled air, cutting out where old transistors began to fail, but they gave Murphy an edge he knew Cotter and his people didn't have. This should be simple, and if the outsiders just happened to get chilled by accident as they recovered Tanner, well, that was just too bad, wasn't it? As long as Wallace got the old fart, he wouldn't moan too loudly.
Pergolesi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Try and pick off Carter. Chill the one-eyed fucker.
Yes, sir. And fuck you, too.
Pri-Sec-Class Pergolesi slid the radio into the pocket of his combat vest. He raised his H&K and took sight at the one-eyed man.
You're mine, you bastard.
How the hell did that madman Murphy expect him to pick off anyone in these conditions with the first shot? And face it, that was all he'd get before fire was returned. He saw the blurred figure move around as he started to squeeze the trigger, unaware of the sun glinting off the H&K's snubby barrel.
Fuck it.
The crack of the ZKR and the whine of the bullet as it took chips off the rocks in front of him made Pergolesi fall backward.
Shit.
Pergolesi! Pergolesi!
Yes, sir?
What the hell was that?
Murphy was too concerned with his mission going to hell to worry about Pergolesi at that moment. After ordering return fire from the other point of his patrol, he directed his men to form into a pincer and close on the group in the enclave, forcing them toward the narrow exit from the small valley. It would be relatively easy to pick them off from there.
Leave the old fart to me! I can't trust any of you mothers to get it right, can I? Shit! If you want something done, you have to do it yourself! Now jump!
He slid his radio into his pocket and checked the clip of the Uzi. It was full. He kissed the barrel again, even though it hadn't brought him much luck first time around, and left the cover of the rocks. One thing Ryan had been correct about was that Murphy and his Sekhmen were used to these conditions, each generation having been blooded in the Enclave by their forefathers as they learned the hard art of defending the redoubt and the mechanism. Each man moved confidently across the terrain, making much better time than any of the outsiders. For his own part, Murphy was down on the floor of the Enclave before Doc even had a chance to move out. The conditions and sudden blaster fire had a bad effect on Doc, taking his fragile psyche back to the psychological battering of the trank darts and comp torture. As he shielded his eyes from the dust storm, he felt as if he were back in the dark, wind-battered tunnel with Laurie. Or was it his beloved Emily?
By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Or does it, indeed? Are you, perchance, the Snark, my friend, or merely a boojum?
Madman.
Murphy raised his Uzi to barrel-whip the old man into submission. Like many another enemy, he'd underestimated the seemingly old man. Despite his apparent fragility, both of mind and body, Doc Tanner had reserves of whipcord strength that could, in an emergency, prove to be of use as surprise. Murphy brought the barrel around in a down-sweeping arc, aiming for Doc's jaw. As the old man brought his lion's head swordstick up to parry, the barrel of the Uzi was deflected, hitting the edge of a rock and sending a painful jolt up Murphy's forearm until it hit his elbow.
Oh, damn it!
Doc rose to his feet, drawing the Lamar pistol and pointing it in Murphy's direction. The Sec Chief stumbled as he tried to regain his balance and level the Uzi. It was only blind fortune that saved him. A bit of grit from the floor of the Enclave caught in a crosswind and whirled viciously between the two men, catching Doc in the eyes.
Ugh.
It disturbed his aim enough for the loud and resounding explosion of the shot to discharge harmlessly over Murphy's head as the Sec Chief regained his poise. He crouched, coming under Doc's outstretched arm with the stock of the Uzi turned toward the old man, angled upward as he drove forward. The stock caught Doc under the ribs, driving the air from his lungs and jarring his heart. Doc's eyes widened, his mouth grotesquely distorted as he exhaled every breath of oxygen within him. The only thought he could muster was to try to start breathing again as he hit the rocks and the dry earth in a sitting position. He dropped the Lamad swordstick, his arms clutching at his aching guts. Murphy pressed home his advantage, bringing the barrel around to crack Doc's jaw.
Ah!
A light went out in the old man's eyes as he slumped into unconsciousness.
Not bad, old man.
Shouldering his Uzi, sticking the Lama into the waistband of his camo pants, and stowing the swordstick in his belt, Murphy leaned over and picked up the old man with a strength that made Doc's dead weight seem like a feather. He was paying little attention to the fighting that was sporadically breaking out at the head of the valley, and so didn't notice the white wraith that drifted toward him. Jack walked past the Sekhmen as though they weren't there. Their attention was focused on attaining the head of the Enclave. As a result, they weren't expecting anyone to go through their ranks in the opposite direction, heading back to the redoubt. Jack had spent his whole life hunting or being hunted, and so found it simple to take the scattered rocks in the opaque storm as cover, flitting across the ground and blending with the rocks and hummocks along the way. The gathering of Sekhmen at the head of the valley and their attempt to stop the group attaining open ground beyond wasn't his problem. Like the rest of the companions, Jack trusted the abilities of the others implicitly, and knew that they would either overcome the obstacles or perish in the effort. Life was that simple. His task now was simply to find Doc and try to get him back to the others. Jack heard the fight before he saw it, and he zeroed in on the noise. He heard Doc's loud exhalation, Murphy's grunt of effort, and the crack of the Uzi on Doc's jaw. Small noises told him that Murphy was in no rush to finish his business. The scufflings were unhurried, and Jack crouched low to the ground, moving noiselessly across the earth. He paused behind a hummock to see Murphy heave Doc over his shoulder and turn back toward the redoubt's entry door. The albino team leveled his Colt Python, sighting along the silver barrel. He cursed silently through gritted teeth as Doc's swaying and unconscious form blocked his line of fire. He wouldn't risk hitting the old man. Holstering his blaster, Jack moved out from behind the hummock and across the enclave with a fluid and silent grace. Murphy was slowed considerably by carrying Doc, so Jack was able to catch up on him quickly. Like magic, a leaf-bladed knife of lethal sharpness sprang into his hand. It would be simple for him to spin the unsuspecting sect chief as he reached the redoubt entrance and chill him before taking Doc back to the others. He was within 3 yards of Murphy, poised as the sect chief fed in the secco to open the redoubt door, when he heard the slightest noise behind him.
What?
Jack whirled to come face to face with an ancient, battered, and home-repaired blaster. The black hole at the end of the barrel was pointing straight between his eyes.
I got no love for that bastard, Cully. But if you don't put that knife away now, your brain's gonna be just so much water on the soil.
If, as Ryan suspected, they were evenly matched in terms of numbers, then why the hell were they suddenly getting volleys of blaster fire coming from behind them? Ryan ducked behind the hummock, uncertain of which was the greater enemy. The new blaster fire was coming from the head of the enclave, and by the manner in which it flew over the heads of the group, kicking up no dust or earth around them, it was clear that it was aimed at the sec men from the redoubt. There was no chance that the newcomer's aim could be that bad. No one survived long in Deathlands without the ability to shoot at least reasonably.
Fire blast!
Ryan cursed the dust storm that seemed unwilling to relent for even a second. The fragments of stone and earth whirling through the air stung his good eye, wormed their way under the patch that covered the empty socket, and bit into the dead flesh. A line of sandy deposit formed, which irritated the long scar that bit into his cheek, from empty eye to jaw. Worst of all, the clouds of dust, earth, and stone moved around in the air, obscuring the movements of his enemies coming from the redoubt, making it impossible to see where these newcomers were positioned. Ryan made a head count.
Shit.
Doc was missing, and Jack had gone in search of him. 2 down. To his left, he could see Christy behind an outcropping. She was trying to pick off Sekman, using her blaster sparingly in the poor visibility to preserve ammo. He couldn't be sure, but it seemed that her mane of red hair wasn't so much being tossed by the storm as fighting against it, whirling wildly around her head. A few yards away, Dean was taking cover behind a grassy hummock. His Browning High Power was a good defensive weapon, but not the best blaster for these kinds of conditions. He, too, was using his blaster sparingly, trying to pick off the opposing sec men as they appeared through the confusion caused by the storm. On the opposite side of the enclave, Mildred and JB were almost completely obscured from his view. He knew they were slowly moving toward his position as their blaster fire was gradually changing direction. He caught a glimpse of JB's fedora and the glint of a stray ray of sunlight on his spectacles. The armorer was walking in a low crouch from a small crop of boulders toward a pile of bare earth and rock that couldn't even be graced with a tidal hummock. It would be barely enough to cover him, but it would suffice if he ever got there. Through the obscured floor of the valley, Ryan caught a glimpse of someone moving parallel to JB along a small rut that was cut into the almost sheer hillside. No human being should have been able to move along the rut as this man did. He ran almost heel to toe with a grace and poise that wouldn't have disgraced a muty goat, even presuming that a muty goat would be able to keep its balance on such a narrow rut in the first place. The man was about 5'2 or 3, and dressed in rags that seemed to swathe rather than clothe him. The layers could hide any number of weapons, although from what little Ryan could see, the man was at the moment unarmed. He was about 100 yards behind JB when Ryan first caught sight of him. But while the armorer was stumbling slowly across the terrain, the man on the narrow ledge moved swiftly. He seemed to pay no attention to the storm raging around him, nor to the blaster fire that echoed and ricocheted around the enclave. As the man drew level with JB, Ryan raised the stire and tried to draw a bead on the armorer's ragged pursuer.
I wish you no harm as yet, my friend. But if you don't drop your blaster, then your blood will fertilize this tainted earth.
Dark night!
JB stumbled yet again on the treacherous floor of the Enclave. Trying to reach the head of the small valley was an option that now seemed like no option at all. His spectacles were covered with dust, and his eyes stung. He held the Uzi across his chest as he ran, ready to spin the blaster in any direction should the need arise. But what direction? The storm was making everything a disorienting experience. So far, he'd been able to make out Murphy's Sekhmen in the fog of dust and grit. He had a bearing for where Ryan was holed up at the head of the small valley, and he made for it.